Renegade Health Radio.
Renegade Health Radio. Kevin Gianni here with Frederick Patnaud. Frederick.
Hola, ¿cómo están?
Muy bien. What's going on, man? We're going to rock it today.
Yeah, I think we did an interesting topic last week on the paleo diet and got a number of comments. Maybe some people decided that to ban us and never listen to us ever again. And I do think that some people missed the point, you know, because some people said, well, you were talking about this stuff and you don't mention any studies. Well, it's a podcast, you know. All the stuff we mention is backed by something, like by science, but we don't have time to go into a two-hour discussion talking over every point. So, you know, we just want to open your mind and make you think differently about something while you're probably washing your dishes, driving your car, jogging around the city, or whatever else people are doing when they're listening to this podcast.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, whether it's backed by science or junk science, I mean, who knows anymore, right? We have no idea about a lot of this stuff, but we do like to open up your minds. And Fred, I think, I could be wrong, but I think that a lot of people who posted some of those comments on the blog, they didn't even listen to the podcast. That's my guarantee, because a lot of the comments were absolutely against, almost like kind of like we're flying in the face of what we said, you know, saying that, oh, we did this and you talked about how the paleo diet is bad. We didn't say anything about that. We were just questioning some of the relevance of the philosophy behind it. Really? I mean, that's kind of, and we were talking about a little less protein and how people take the liberty to eat, you know, if suddenly it's paleo, now you can, you know, drink grass-fed butter in your coffee. I mean, and I'm knocking Dave Asprey on that either, but I mean, like, you know, so, I mean, come on, you know, how much of this stuff are you going to eat? I mean, it's kind of just like, you know, when you start to get off your diet, you just eat as much sugar as possible. You know, that's wrong. So, you know, now maybe you're on your diet and you eat as much meat as possible. I mean, there's an extreme kind of behavior going on that I think people need to really pay attention to, or else they're just going to end up not healthy. That's the bottom line.
Well, we got a comment that I thought was pretty interesting. You want to quote it, Kevin? This is a comment from Isabel. And I think, this is someone who's totally getting our podcast.
I think so too. And so is it Isabel? Yeah, Isabel. I want to thank you for putting in this, this conversation, you know, adding to this conversation. So she starts with, you know, I think people need to understand Frederick and Kevin are touching upon topics, giving personal perspectives and opinions, while not delving into the subject matter in depth in the time allotted in the podcast. So yes, yes, thank you. You're amazing. And, you know, pulls up a great point about the paleo diet and the paleo movement that maybe we didn't even, you know, speak about as eloquently as this. And so I'll read this paragraph and then we're going to get into the topic. The other thing that she brings up that she wants us to talk about today, she says, what I like about the paleo movement and any other movement as such is the goal toward a cleaner, healthier diet and ultimately respect for animal welfare, albeit indirectly, i.e. grass-fed, non-factory farm. Any movement that embraces a more holistic approach to eating is moving in the right direction. Fred, can you like do like a yoo-hoo?
Woo-hoo. Oh, yeah.
I am glad to see the world embracing a more nutritionally sound and quality-based diet. The upside is, it seems, everyone across the board these days can agree upon processed foods being out. One more. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And whole-sourced foods being in.
Woohoo.
There we go. So, I mean, what an amazing way to eloquently say exactly what we feel about this. Yes, paleo is getting the bad out. It's awesome. You know, I truly think it's what you leave out of your diet, not what you put in your diet, is what keeps you healthy. And the respect for animal welfare, I think anyone, vegans, raw foodies, breatharians, you know, Atkinsians, all of these people, anyone can agree, most people can agree that the way that we're treating animals in a conventional way, CAFOs and all these types of, you know, really poor, very poor mistreatment of living creatures. I think that needs to go. We all can agree upon that. Paleo is producing information that is allowing people to understand what that actually means. So people are going to grass-fed, grass-finished. People know what grass-finish means now, which means that the animals are not just grass-fed, but they are fed grass their entire life before they're slaughtered. I mean, that's, you know, that's getting closer. It's getting closer.
And so, now the question also that she asked, that yeah. I'd love to answer in this podcast, is to talk a little bit about the China study and other indigenous cultures that we've mentioned in previous podcasts.
All right. Do you want to start with the China study, or do you want me to start with it?
Well, yeah, start with the China study. I think we're not going to go into the details of the China study, but for people who don't know the China study, first of all, the China study is a study, but it's also a book by T. Colin Campbell. So those are two different things, right? The book is not the study, but it's a book that promotes a plant-based diet, low protein, or when we say low protein, we mean less than 10% of calories or somewhere in that range. And it's based off the author's experience with the actual China study, being in China, and also his previous work of studying nutrition, the effects of protein on animal and cancer growth and so on, which I find to be the most interesting part of the book, not the actual China study. But the China study is probably the largest nutrition study ever done on the different counties in China and how they eat and how this ultimately affects their health. So basically, the conclusions of the book, the China study, is that animal products tend to lead to more degenerative diseases such as heart disease and cancer. I think that's the general conclusion. But the book is about much more than this. It's about other information, other studies that have been done, kind of converging in the direction that the author is ultimately going to.
And for me, I've used the China study as reference in the past, and at times I still do use the book as reference for evidence of eating more plants, eating less animals. I mean, it's kind of just one of those things that makes sense. I mean, the epidemiological research that is in this book and also in the actual original study is good for one example of possibly eating more plants, less meat. I have some problems with the China study, though. I have some problems with it. One is that it is studying indigenous Chinese people, and the problem with that is that not all of us are indigenous Chinese people, and we don't have the same genes. So we're looking at we have some of the same genes, but we don't have all the same genes. So we're looking at people who have adapted genetically as well as situationally to the foods that they're eating. So that's important to know. So I mean, you can't just switch over to the diet of the Chinese as for people. Maybe you can't switch over to the diet of Chinese if you are from, say, your genes are different if you're from, you know, Northern Europe or other areas. And now someone might argue that with me, but it's kind of one of those things where each of these cultures, when they're living in their areas, they develop the genes and they develop the actual expression of their genes, which I mean more specifically for the foods that they're eating. So their bodies adapt, and then that starts to change over a period of time. So their genes do change. Some people argue that they don't. They do. Fred, you can explain the lactose gene after I'm done with that. Or actually, why don't you do that now?
Well, I want to talk to a little bit. Maybe I want to argue with you a tiny bit about this. I do think you're right that the genes change based on where you live, you know, and your ancestry and so on. And like, for example, the example you wanted me to mention is the lactose tolerance gene, which is a gene that essentially appeared in currently present in a third of the world population that allows people with that gene, like you and me, I guess, to digest milk. And milk, the lactose specifically, which is the sugar in dairy products. to use it as a source of energy. So that's kind of a proof that the human body can adapt really quickly in a matter of a few hundred generations to a change in their diet and so on, because people with that gene were more likely to survive when they had no other sources of nutrition. So that being said, I think that there must be general processes by which the human being works, and the diet that could work essentially, or the reasons that lead to disease, possibly the foods that lead to disease, would be similar all across the world. But just like you said, there are some differences. Some people are more sensitive to certain things. Some people, as we know, tend to get more health problems when they consume certain foods. But with the experience of an Asian diet and so on, I think it's possible to, in fact, I know it's possible to take a diet that is more Asian-like, which is more based on, let's say, rice and vegetables or grains and vegetables, and feed it to a Northern European person with health problems, and they will recover. And also when you see people coming from those regions moving to the United States and adopting a Western diet, they do get sick. So I think there's something to be said to the effect that the general rich Western diet, which is rich in calories, sugar, protein, and fat, leads to disease, and a diet that is low in calories overall, but more specifically high in nutrients per calorie, and probably also low in fat or lower in fat and lower in protein than the standard American diet, leads to better health all across the board. And that's my belief based on the research.
Yeah, I can agree with that to a certain degree, just because of the fact that if someone's unhealthy, a Northern European who's unhealthy, the diet that they're going to be eating that is Chinese is going to be the natural Chinese diet. I mean, it's not going to be filled with processed foods by any means. It's going to have less. It's going to have less meat. It's going to have less, you know, high density foods that are more difficult to digest. So yes, I can agree on that. The other challenge I have with the China study is that the way people present it is that, you know, I think what happened is that, you know, the vegan community and even the raw food community, in two ways. So the vegan community in one way and the raw food community in another way, embraced it. And then they glossed over the fact that the Chinese in this study do eat a little bit of animal protein. And depending on, you know, how many calories you eat per day, there is a percentage of calories from animal protein. And if you eat about 3,000 calories, it equates to about one egg a day or every 2 days. So the question is, is that one egg a day or, you know, one egg every 2 days significant enough to provide additional health benefits? And that's an important question, because, you know, you only need a little bit of, certain foods to have the health benefits from them. Right, so to have the nutrients, in the case of something that has animal protein, it's a high density nutritional food. So that does have a lot of amino acids once the protein is broken down, and it has other different vitamins as well that may be helpful or may not. I don't know. I don't know the answer to this, but that's a question that I always think about when I think about the China study and how vegans have glossed over the fact that there is animal protein in the diet. And then raw foodies suddenly assume that just because, you know, you can do a high vegetable food, low protein diet, raw foodies just assume that just translates over to eating raw foods, where Chinese, you know, the Chinese eat very little raw foods. So, I mean, you have to think about how the food is much more easily digested if it's cooked, how raw foods are much more difficult for people to digest, particularly people who have digestive issues. I mean, you can't just take the science and just say, all right, well, then it just applies to raw foodies, or then it applies to, you know, the breatharians. So 80% carbon dioxide, 10% oxygen, 10% nitrogen.
You like to come back to the breatharians, do you?
I do, because I think it's ridiculous. I really do. I think it's true. I'm sorry if you're a breatharian and you're listening to this. I think you're doing something ridiculous.
Well, do you want me to tell a breatharian joke before we continue?
I do, yeah.
So there's a group of people that go to a breatharian restaurant, right? One of those restaurants that are for breatharians. And so the server comes and the waiter comes and asks, you know, what every person is going to get. So the first person says, I think I'm going to have the cool Arctic air. Fine, sir, of course. And then the second gets the tropical scent with lying flowers in it. You know, so they get that. Then the third person says, you know what? Nothing for me. I'm fasting. That's a really bad joke that I learned from David Wolf years ago. But all right, now that everybody has forgotten what we were talking about, let me comment on the thing you were talking about. And I do ask that question when you mentioned that, you know, what is the amount of protein that is healthy to eat? And if those people were eating it, doesn't that mean something, even if it's a low amount? And I think if you look at the China study and you look at similar studies, there seems to be a threshold above which too much animal food seems to be problematic. And that threshold is between 5 and 10% of total calories. So that kind of goes with what you said, like an egg on a 3,000 calorie diet, that would be less than 5% of total calories. So could that be beneficial? Probably. Maybe. Who knows? But the thing that's for sure is that I think we can put animal foods in the same category as other rich foods like nuts and seeds and so on, in the sense that they're rich in concentrated foods, and animal foods have the another particular characteristic is that they're rich in protein and have other things that, let's say, plant foods don't have. So is that beneficial? Do we need that? What is the amount? I think that if you're sick and you're battling disease, my opinion is you should aim at a lower amount of all of those concentrated foods and stick with the high water content foods, the lower protein foods, the high nutrient density foods. I think that's what most of the cleanses, most of the detox diets, most of the healing diets are doing anyway. Just it varies. And then if you or maybe you're active and you're building, maybe you need more of the concentrated foods. And I think that the way that Asians are eating their meats and eating those foods is more as a condiment, whereas in the West, we tend to kind of put a big piece of steak on a plate, and then that's the center of the meal, and then we put stuff around it as condiments almost to the meat-based food that is the center of your plate. So it's a totally different way of looking at it.
Yeah, you mentioned about being sick, you know, to eat less. It just depends. If you're sick from a vegan diet, or if you're sick from, you know, not getting enough of the nutrients, then you might need to switch and add more protein as well. Because, I mean, that's kind of what happened to me. That's my own personal thing. But we're not knocking the vegan diet here, guys. I want to be very clear about that. We're not knocking raw food. We are knocking breatharianism. But what I want to say here is that get your blood tested. And you know what? Forget it. No, even if you're breatharian, get your blood tested.
Breatharians.
It's fine.
There are no breatharians.
I shouldn't knock this. If you are breatharian, get your blood tested. Continue to be breatharian. Continue to get your blood test. And if your results are fine, then we'll talk. Then I'd like to hear about that. I'd like to see them and show me, you know, show me the results. But here's the thing. Do what you enjoy, right? Do what you think is healthy. Get your blood tested. Get your omega-3. Get the omega-3 test, you know, that we have on the site. Get do some other allergy tests. Do whatever tests you want. You know, do a fitness test, you know, for heaven's sake. You know, see if you're improving in your fitness. Your heart rate is improving. And then continue to eat that way and do another blood test 6 months down the road. If everything's still fine, keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing that process, and then you'll determine if your diet's working for you or not. And that's, you know, I wish I had known that back when I started the vegan diet, because I would have seen my numbers decrease, my hormone numbers decrease. I would have seen my B12 levels decrease, my vitamin D levels decrease, my cholesterol, you know, drop to levels that aren't good for me, and my HDL and LDL ratio out of whack. My pregnenolone dropping to about a 7, which is about the pregnenolone of an 85-year-old man. I would have seen all these things happening, and I would have stopped before. Well, I probably wouldn't have stopped before then, because I was kind of just very indoctrinated into the vegan philosophy. But I probably would have stopped sooner, and probably wouldn't have had to have rebuilt as much as I had to do.
Totally agree, Kevin. I think apart from being a breatharian, you know, there's not that many things you can do in your diet that are definitely going to be damaging like that. But I wanted to say something about the breatharian diet. You kind of got me, you know, riled up on breatharianism because, you know, although I don't think, in fact, I am convinced that nobody actually is a breatharian, I did meet some fake breatharians, people that claim to be breatharians, like all breatharians are fake breatharians, but they claim to live on air, right? Do you know who Wiley Brooks is? Right, so Wiley Brooks called at my house in San Diego when I was living there in my early 20s. So he wanted to talk with my friend because he had convinced my friend to start eating burgers, right, from being a vegetarian before. And Wiley Brooks is this guy who's like a spokesperson, we should say, for the breatharian diet. He actually owns the website breatharian.com, and the term might actually come from him. So, but he was also caught with the quarter pounder burgers with cheese from McDonald's. And in his website, he talks about how, you know, he found that the double quarter pounder with cheese from McDonald's is a fifth dimension food. So it has a special base frequency. So if you're a breatharian, you need to kind of go back in that base frequency once in a while. And that the perfect meal to do that is the double quarter pounder with cheese from McDonald's with Diet Coke, because the Diet Coke acts as a binding agent, which binds all the sugars and toxins from the meal, of course. And it is a catalyst that draws out the toxins to the digestive tract and escorts them out of the body as waste. So that's how my friend Andrew ended up eating cheeseburgers after being a vegetarian for a while. But, you know, it's just crazy that there are people out there sharing this information and passing it as actual truth. But I don't know what goes on in their minds, actually.
Here we go. It is better to have some Diet Coke in your bloodstream before starting the meditation exercise. You may drink as much as you desire of Diet Coke in the 20-ounce and 1-liter sizes at McDonald's with caffeine in the plastic bottles only. The double quarter pounder with cheese meal at McDonald's is the other part of this diet.
You found that online? I'm not making this up.
Hold on. For listeners in Europe, if you're interested, substitute the hamburger royale with cheese for the double quarter with cheese and Coca-Cola Light for the Diet Coke. Drink only the Coca-Cola Light in all caps. Oh, and it also is also acceptable to combine 2 quarter pounders with cheeseburgers to make 1 double quarter pounder if you can't get the double quarter pounder with cheese where you live.
But you know, Wiley Brooks, there was like a, you can find on YouTube, there's like a, there's a guy who did a little film on the guy, so he followed him and so on, and you can hear Wiley talking, and he's kind of a, you know, this funny, crazy black dude who's really thin anyway, so he looks actually pretty healthy. I mean, the guy is like 70 years old or something.
And he's now 77.
He looks like he's much younger, right? And he's very active and so on, and he apparently is a breatharian, aside from, of course, you know, Diet Coke and double quarter pounder with cheese from McDonald's. So, you know, who knows?
We should get Wiley on the show.
Yeah, we should get Wiley on the show. But you know,
with all in deep respect for his work, regardless of what we think about it, you know, just not like, you know, we're poking fun at him here, but I mean, I'd like to hear what the guy has to say about this stuff.
But there's also a part of his website where you can get a consultation with him, but the cost is $1 billion. he's not even kidding.
Yeah, here's, and there's no refunds.
No refunds.
That's what it says. No refunds in red here. So,
all right. Well, that was a little bit of fun, but you brought it up, Kevin. You brought up the breatharians.
I did. So anyway, Isabel, I want to thank you for your comment. Frederick and I both want to thank you for your comment. We really feel that you've encapsulated kind of what we do here. And so thank you for your contribution. And I hope that you enjoyed this one. Maybe we should have touched on the China study more than we touched on breatharianism, but I think you get the point, and I think everyone else could as well. So thanks for listening all the way through, guys. Please put a comment up on iTunes. If you're listening to this on iTunes, we'd appreciate your comments. It helps us stay relevant in the iTunes world so other people can hear this information. If you think other people should hear this information, I mean, who knows? Maybe you've now abandoned us because of our views on the paleo diet. But anyway, guys, we will talk to you next time.
See you next week.
Renegade Health Radio.